Good morning, everyone. Mr. Alanak and Information Services, is everything set to go for opening the meeting?
I believe this is Chris Alanak. I'm checking this. Yes, the recording has started.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. I'm opening this meeting of the Interim Committee, House Revenue. We are having an informational meeting today for the purpose of reviewing and discussing an LC draft, a legislative concept that has been written. It's been posted for a couple of days now. I have asked Legislative Revenue Office to be prepared to not only explain the background a little bit of what's in the CARES Act, to explain that, and also, however, to go over this legislative concept to make sure we understand the different parts of it. I want to let you know also that I have asked Legislative Revenue Office to be prepared to respond to a couple of things. First of all, we are often asked, well, how does Oregon stack up to other states? I have asked LRO to provide some context, since the CARES Act does impact every state, but each state in a slightly different way. Although it may look simple to just look at a chart showing which states have an income tax, it very quickly gets complicated after that. Some states are already connected to the federal tax code, some states are not connected, and some connect in different ways or partially. Or maybe some states have a different tax treatment of a specific piece, such as depreciation. We have heard that about 18 or 19 states are in a situation similar to Oregon, and of those, apparently several have decided to disconnect. For example, New York and Colorado, also Georgia and North Carolina. And we understand that Nebraska is actively discussing disconnecting now. So I have asked during the presentation for Legislative Revenue Office to explain to us why it's not simple to just say, look at a map and these states are connected and these states are not. So just help us understand why when we ask you the question, you can't just in 2 minutes time come up with an answer, because there are so many special points to look at. The second thing I want to mention is that the CARES Act has many separate provisions. What we're discussing today is just a very small piece of everything that the CARES Act it did for helping states. The LRO report from May explains that in a broad overview in the first paragraph. Some of the provisions are aimed at helping individuals, and some of the provisions are aimed at helping businesses. So during the presentation today, I would like LRO to also make clear to us how the actions that are described in this LC draft would impact individuals or would impact businesses. So we're ready for Legislative Revenue Office presentation now. First, I should ask, though, sorry about that. I want to mention that we have all of the committee members are scheduled to join us eventually, but only some of the committee members are with us right at this moment. Others are joining in a little bit late because they have to sign off from other committees that they're participating in. Let's go around the table so the public hears everybody who's here today. Let's start with Representative Marsh.
Thank you. This is Pam Marsh, present via video.
Thank you. Representative Reschke? And welcome. I see you're on video as well as audio.
Thank you. This is Representative E. Warner Reschke, from Southern Klamath and Lake Counties via video.
Thank you, Representative Kenny Geyer.
Hi, Rep. Kenny Geyer from Southeast Northeast Portland, present via video.
At Representative Smith.
Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Representative Greg Smith, participating by telephone, and I will be going on mute.
Thank you. And as the others join us, we will see and hear them. Okay, now, thank you, Chris.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Just to get us started, and then I'll be handing it over to Kyle and Kate, who have some detailed information on the policies. But just to set up the conversation and point out to members of the committee and everybody following some information that is included that's been posted in OLS. We have the LCO2 draft, or the LC2 draft that's in OLS. We also have the CARES Act report that we put together and that was presented back in June, and that goes through the full CARES Act revenue provisions. Not the entire CARES Act, just the revenue pieces, but that's what the chair was referring to. It's that whole piece. It's about a 10-page report, and the first two pages, pages 2 and 3, reference the provisions that are addressed in LC2. There is also a third document called Federal Connection, which is just it's our latest report. It's just a two-pager summary on the concept of Federal Connection. Just for those who aren't familiar with it, it's meant to be a very high-level just description of what is meant by Reconnect, Federal Connect when we talk about it. There aren't any numbers in it, there aren't any estimates in it. It's kind of conceptual and provides a little bit of history of when the state has disconnected. And then there's the presentation from Kate and Kyle. So to address one of the issues, before we turn to them, that the chair brought up about what other states do, some of the challenges there really rely in knowing where the states currently stand. A number of states will have a static connection date. So they are, for example, tied to federal law, say December 31st, 2019. So they're not automatically necessarily connected to the provision, and those state legislators might be going through the process of deciding what to connect to and what not. Other states may have kind of a permanent disconnect from some federal provisions. I guess the example that I go to would be Oregon for corporate NOLs. We are not affected by the corporate NOL policy at the federal level because the state has its own NOL policy. So the debate about whether connecting or not doesn't happen yet because we're already disconnected. And the policies in LC2 are the ones that are kind of wrapped up in that inherent connection. So the discussion is a little bit different. So some states might be in that position. And so it takes some time to go through the other states and really find out, okay, is the question of do they need to disconnect the right question? Some of them it'll be the other question, do they want to connect? And so it takes a good bit of time to go through the states. And sometimes there are entities that put out these lists, their various organizations, and we're still combing through the information. We have some partial information, and as we compile that and we get a more complete list, we'll certainly share that with the committee. So just to prep you for the presentation before handing off to, I think Kyle is going first, the three policies are business loss limitations and NOLs, and those two policies are closely linked together. And then the third policy is the business interest deduction. And each of those, there are a couple, I think of it as three policies, but each one of those, the NOL and the interest, has a couple of pieces to it. So just to try and set the framework for what Kyle and Kate are going to go into in detail, that's the framework. So,
great.
Unless you're,
thank you. I want to interrupt for just a moment and welcome Representative Lawrence Spence, who has joined us. Glad you got here and you were here in time for much of the opening explanation. Good to see you. And I also wanted to ask if everyone can please now set their microphone to mute. I'm hearing some background noise. It's just like white noise, but it's a little bit obvious. So if we could all set our microphones on mute during the presentations, and then be sure to raise your hand or use chat or break in with a question. I'd like for each presenter to get at least most of their presentation out before we start getting into questions, so that we don't get into digressions and then not have time to finish the whole piece. Okay, we're ready for the first part.
Okay, so thank you, Chris, and thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Caitlin Harger from the Legislative Revenue Office. I am going to share my screen, which has the presentation that Kyle and I have put together, and I will start the presentation and Kyle will finish it. To give you kind of some context on what we did with the presentation, we started kind of as a baseline or a starting presentation of what you've seen before regarding the CARES Act details, but focusing specifically on the ones that are going to be affected by LC2. And then we've also noted in the presentation what effect LC2 would have on those provisions. So it's building on something you've seen before, but because the details can be pretty intricate here, we're kind of working on that moving forward. So LC2, which is posted in OLIS, does three main kind of disconnects that Chris mentioned. So the first that I'll talk about is disconnecting from the increase in business interest deduction limitations. So basically, this would disconnect us from the provision that allows businesses to deduct more of their business interest. The second one is to disconnect from net operating loss provisions. And the third is to disconnect from the business loss limitation provisions. So going into the discussion moving forward, we'll talk about each three of these categories. And again, the focus here is what LC2 does in relation to the CARES Act. Just for general purposes, we've included a summary slide here of which sections of the LC do what, because, of course, it can be difficult reading through all of this detailed information and keeping track of where the policies are. So here, I'd like to draw your attention to Section 2. That's the loss limitation piece. Section 3 is the NOL disconnect. And Sections 4 and 6 are the business interest limitations. So those three policies before would be shown here in sections 2, 3, and then 4 and 6 of the bill. The other portions of the bill are things like statutory language, applicability and effective dates. There's a waiver of penalty and interest relating to disconnect from the Department of Revenue. So we have this here for your reference. And then now I'll move on to the first provision that we're discussing. So first, we'll talk about the business interest limitation modification. So the way these charts set up and the way the subsequent slides are set up is you'll see what the law was before the CARES Act, what the CARES Act did, so that's now current law, the current Oregon impact, and then the last column, which I have bolded, would be the impact if LC2 is adopted. So we have a lot of information here. I'm going to go through a little bit of a refresher on the business interest limitation modification. So before CARES Act was in place, before COVID, interest expenses were allowed to be deducted as a part of the corporate or business returns. And there was a limit on how much interest could be deducted. And so they allowed the sum of three things: business interest income, floor plan financing interest expense, and this is kind of a minor category here. This deals with, I think, motor vehicle dealerships and large floor plan spacing. But the primary one was 30% of adjusted taxable income. So that's the one that I would say it's important that we focus on here, because the CARES Act changed that 30% to a 50%. So that's the first bullet point in this yellow section. So it increased the limit to allow for 50% of average taxable income for tax years 19 and 20. So that's the first change. Then the second change here is that the CARES Act allows businesses to use their 2019 average taxable income to make, adjusted taxable income, to make that 50% calculation. So assuming that your 2019 income is likely larger than your 2020 income, using the 2019 income gives you a larger deduction. So two main changes with the CARES Act, you increase the amount of deduction that's allowed to 50%, and then they are allowing a 2019 income measure to be used for that calculation. So currently there's a direct impact to Oregon because this flows through from the federal return into Oregon returns, and there's a revenue loss expected. And this, all the information up until now is stuff that you've seen from Kyle and I in our May presentation and in the CARES Act report. Now, if LC2 is enacted, again, there are three provisions that LC2 is addressing. This is the first, the business interest limitation. It would require taxpayers basically to go back to that 30% limit, sort of the pre-CARES limit, and it would require them to use 2020 adjusted taxable income for the reference for their calculation. So the two changes that the CARES Act made, LC2 would revert to pre-CARES Act conditions. And then at the bottom, there's a table that shows if LC2 is adopted for this concept, these are the revenue impacts in millions across the biennia. And these numbers are similar to the ones that were in our CARES report. That report's written from a different perspective, but these are numbers that you've seen before. And with that, I'm going to hand things over to Kyle to continue the presentation.
Before you move to the next speaker, Representative Reschke has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Caitlin. Do you have a sense, this is my assumption, I'm just trying to validate it, is that businesses in 2020 are more leveraged, meaning they've had to borrow more money in order to meet their operational costs. So I'm trying to figure out why the federal government in the bipartisan Federal CARES Act would have done this. Do you have any sense of why they would have included this provision or these two provisions in the act?
Sure. So Chair Nathanson and Representative Reschke, thank you for the question. I think the goal in general behind the CARES Act was to give additional maybe liquidity or availability of funds to businesses. And this provision gives them a larger deduction on their tax return, so effectively trying to provide that. In response to the leveraging question, that is an interesting kind of concept that I don't know that we have a lot of data on currently, just because things are moving so quickly, but that could of course come into play here, absolutely. And that kind of ties back into the 2019 income level likely being higher than 2020.
Thank you.
Okay, and if there are no other questions, I will go to the next slide and let Kyle.
I have a question, if I can. I'm sorry to, can I proceed, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. So I just want to ask, I think because Representative Reschke asked this question, it posed another question to me, because it seems like we're trying to think about whether businesses are going to need this tax deduction to help them remain more liquid, right? And so I'm thinking, do we have any data on what these same businesses were able to leverage in terms of PPP loans, and were they able to gain access to those that they don't have to necessarily repay? So maybe they did receive some loans, but maybe they were forgivable and they don't necessarily need this larger deduction now.
Sure. So Chair Nathanson and Rep. Lawrence Spence, thank you for the question. I don't think we have data currently on tying PPP loans to taxpayers in Oregon in order to know whether or not each taxpayer would need, or I guess rather than need, say how much it would change their liability. I can definitely work on finding some more information about those PPP loans and how it interacts with this provision, though. Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, so I will advance the slides, of course, unless there are any other questions, and I will turn things over to Kyle.
Yeah, we're ready for Kyle now.
Okay, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, I'll be picking up here on slide number five and continuing with the same theme or the same slide layout as what Kate just went through as well. But before I get into, I guess, what's the net operating losses that's on slide number five, it's just going back to, I guess, the introduction, Madam Chair, where you were asking about business or individuals. And in the cases of the next two provisions that I'll be discussing, we're talking about the personal income tax and pass-through businesses. So you can be thinking of, well, maybe the provision itself was aimed, you could say it's aimed at a business, but really it's going to be affecting taxpayers with business income or maybe business losses in many, many instances. So it's kind of a blend in that case of, well, if you don't have any business income or business loss, then you're not affected by this, but the actual tax provision is going to work through the personal income tax system. So again, it is, I would say, a blend of, is this a business or is this a provision aimed at individuals? And then another thing related, building on what Chris was saying about other states, I think one thing that's probably worthwhile to keep in mind as well, in not just comparing how states connect, but it's also probably their underlying tax structure as well. If you think about a state that perhaps has a more diversified revenue base, or is less reliant on the income tax, then proportionally the changes at the federal level that filter through, assuming that state is connected, may be different than a different state that is more reliant on, say, the income tax, which is something Oregon is generally going to be in that bucket, where we don't have a sales tax. So our revenue stream is more reliant on that income tax. So proportionally, an impact of a federal change can be greater for, say, Oregon and its impact on, say, general fund revenue than another state. So that's probably another thing to keep in mind when we're talking about comparisons with other states. And we've seen that in some of our discussion with other states on just what their expectation of the revenue impact is. That can flow through depending upon what your tax rates are, of course. If you have higher tax rates, then a change to NOLs, net operating losses, can be a different revenue impact than, say, a state with lower income tax rates. But just another thing, I suppose, to keep in mind with that comparison. But so starting with the net operating losses, again, we're building on kind of the discussion that we had back in May. And so we set it up where the Pre-CARES Act and the Post-CARES Act, and then the impact here in Oregon and the LC2 impact of the disconnect. But I would say for maybe a good way to think about what this provision, this NOL provision is, and then the next one as well, is it's about monetizing, if you will, through the tax system, a tax loss in many cases, or a change in tax. It's monetizing the tax change on behalf of the taxpayer. So that's was, in some cases, I would say, is probably the underlying, perhaps, motivation of the CARES Act was, well, if you can monetize that loss more quickly for the taxpayer, and they can realize that to offset some of their tax either in previous years or in current years, then the taxpayer gets more of that positive cash flow, if you will. And then we would see on the flip side, the state would get sort of a negative cash flow with maybe a positive then in later years. And that's something we've seen in the revenue numbers we have here, as in many cases, we might be talking about a deferral of tax, or we're talking about the timing of when this tax revenue would come in or would not come in and then come in later. But so with that backdrop, the net operating losses, the structure here and what was put in place by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act a few years back was, in some cases, limiting how you could use a net operating loss. So what a net operating loss is in a simple sense, you can think of this as a taxpayer who has business losses, and those losses would exceed other income unrelated to the business, non-business income they have on the return. It exceeds that, so they have a loss for the year. And so if they have that loss for the year, maybe they have negative, they essentially could have a negative income. What do you do with that loss? And what the Tax Cut and Jobs Act did was said, well, net operating losses, those are going to be carried forward from here on out. And that was the law, with a further limit of, well, when you carry forward that loss to maybe another tax year, when you have other income to offset against that loss, we're going to limit that to 80% of that taxable income. So there was a secondary limit put in place on when you could use that loss. But the general theme here is, if you have a loss in 1 year, it's not like that loss then goes away. You could use it in a later tax year to offset some of that income. It's just a timing of when the taxpayer would receive, I guess, a later benefit from that loss in reducing their taxable income in a later year. So what the CARES Act did was it made modification to that more stringent Tax Cut and Jobs Act statute that was put in place related to net operating losses. And again, this is with the idea of monetizing those losses more quickly. So the CARES Act is allowing taxpayers to take losses that they have in 18, 19, and tax year 20, and carry those back to previous tax years that they would have, one would assume would have positive income there, and use that loss to offset that positive income in a past year up to 5 years. So if you have a loss in tax year 19, but you had a gain or you had income back in, say, 2016, you could carry that loss back by filing an amended return and get the benefit of that loss, if you will, by increasing essentially what would be a tax refund for that previous tax year by carrying that loss back. And so that's why when we shared the information and the numbers back in May, we were seeing this as it's a near-term loss in the current and the upcoming biennium, because taxpayers are allowed to carry these losses back. But then under current law, they can normally carry those forward. Well, if they carry them back, then there's less to carry forward in later years. So we saw a near-term loss, and then you start to see revenue gains, if you will, in later years. The numbers you see on the screen today are related to disconnecting from the recent CARES Act provisions. So you're essentially just flipping the sign of those numbers, because we're going to be saying, well, no, we're not going to allow that carry back of those losses. So you'd still work as if the CARES Act hadn't happened, and you would just take those losses in later years. And then we'd also be reinstating that 80% limit as well. So again, this is just stopping those taxpayers from carrying those losses back, but they're not gone. They still can be used in later years, and we'd expect them to be used in those later years as well. But that's the overview I have for the net operating losses. I can go to the next slide, or I can pause here if there's any questions specific to that provision, or we can do questions for both provisions at once, however.
Kyle, I'd like to ask a question of either you or Chris. You mentioned that in some cases this is a matter of timing, you know, whether it's something that we would see in this year or this biennium, or you would see the impact in another biennium. Could you please tell us, or I know Chris has done this calculation, if you look at LC2, which covers three different provisions, and they each have a little bit different, you know, the mechanics of it are different. Could you please tell us over three biennia, if you take the net effect of all of the actions, even though there are puts and takes and it's more here and less there, will you comment on the net impact of this? Or are we going to talk about the numbers later, how much each one is, how much impact each one is having individually, and then you can comment on the total, whichever way you were planning to do it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, on the slide, we tried to include the numbers. Again, these are just the same numbers we had back in May, but the signs have been flipped because we're now disconnecting. But that attempts to kind of show where, for the net operating losses, we expect that near-term revenue lift. And then in later years, because we would expect the losses then to be carried forward to later years, and that's where we would feel the state would have a decrease in revenue in later years. From the taxpayer point of view, they're getting kind of the benefit later. They're carrying those forward rather than being able to carry them back and realize them sooner rather than later. In a general sense, this would balance out. if all things were being equal, it would balance out over a number of years. Now, of course, there's the time value money and things as well. But another implication is the potential for, and this will be depend upon individual taxpayers, perhaps their past tax year, maybe 2016 or something along those lines, they had different, we did a different race, both at the federal level and the local level as well, where it may be more beneficial to have that loss in a previous tax year or maybe in a later tax year as well. It would depend upon the individual taxpayer that could throw off this, you know, where we would say we can't guarantee it's like, yes, this is all a matter of, it'll balance out over the next 15 years. It's all a matter of timing. There could be some movement back and forth, especially at the federal level where they changed some of the tax rates. It could be more beneficial to carry that back. But in a general sense, it really is kind of a timing thing and whether you feel a positive here and then a negative later or vice versa.
I think you're on mute, Rep. Nathan.
Representative Kenny Geyer would like to say something, and that will be followed by Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to ask something of Kyle based on what he was talking about balancing out over time. My understanding is that if we do disconnect at the state level, these businesses will still get the CARES Act, this provision at the federal level. So in some ways, they benefit in terms of taking more of a revenue, more of a savings to them at the federal level while putting off some of their savings at the state level. So I'm just curious as to, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer. Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. Whereas like at the federal level, you could still be carrying these back. And especially with the federal rates being higher, you're probably going to get more of that benefit at the federal level and then less at the state. But yeah, I think you said it perfectly, yeah.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Kyle. I guess my question is similar to that of Caitlin's, to Caitlin, was why do you feel that this provision was put in the CARES Act? What's the advantage, or why would the bipartisan folks up in Washington do that? What's the benefit here?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I really think the motivation, that, and I'm kind of assuming it here, but it would be about monetizing those losses, the business losses, in the tax system and doing that sooner rather than later. Because absent the CARES Act, a taxpayer has these losses, they can carry them forward. Well, tax year 2020 is probably not going to be a great year for most taxpayers. So you're looking at maybe 2021, 2022 before you start to monetize, if you will, these losses. So there's definitely a delay there, but the CARES Act, I think, is changing that. Well, if you can carry them back for 5 years, as soon as you can start filing those amended returns, you can that gets processed through, you can start to see some of the cash flow benefits. So that's my assumption, is that really is about increasing cash flow for these businesses that can benefit from it.
Okay, so just so I understand, Caitlin's answer was liquidity, yours is cash flow, so very similar. All right, thank you.
Okay, so moving on to the next slide number six here, and this is related to the non-corporate business loss limitation. Again, this is working similar or in terms of a business versus an individual. This is going to be an individual that has a business loss, so it's going to be that blend, once again, who's affected. But starting off again with the Pre-CARES Act, this was a Tax Cut and Jobs Act provision again, and this is one of the, while the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was a net tax cut, there were provisions in there that leaded to what we say is maybe tax increases, or at least in this case, the change of when taxpayers are realizing some losses. So the Pre-CARES Act, it's a limitation put in place about, this is going to affect taxpayers that have business losses and have other income unrelated to a business loss. And normally when you think, or normally before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, if you had a large amount of business losses, and then you also had a large amount of, say, income in unrelated to that, or unrelated to business, so non-business income, say portfolio income, you could offset that non-business income with those business losses, and you would offset that in the tax year in which you're filing.
Kyle, I'm going to interrupt for a moment. Put portfolio in some other words.
Oh, yeah, Madam Chair, I guess that would just be capital gains, those sorts of things. Yeah, it's stocks, interest earnings, something along those lines, or even wages as well. It really is, you could see business income and then the non-business income. There are some limitations on different gains and losses, but that's, yeah, the general takeaway. I'm sorry, I'll...
Thank you.
Yeah, try to get that.
We may have lots of people not revenue regulars listening in. Thank you.
Right. Yes. I'll try to avoid the acronyms as much as possible too. So for this loss limitation, it's putting in the limitation is set for whether you're a single or a joint filer, and it's set to $250,000 or $500,000. These are indexed, but so the idea being if you had, let's say you're a single filer, you have $500,000 in business losses, but you have an equal amount, $500,000 in non-business positive income. Well, before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, those would have wiped each other out, more or less. Your business losses would have netted out to zero your other non-business income. You then have zero income. Okay, you file your taxes, move forward. The issue here, or the limitation here, is saying, well, we're going to limit the amount of business losses you can use to offset that other income. So in some ways, this will affect taxpayers that have losses above these limits, 250 or 500,000, so quite a bit of business losses, and also have business income that would offset. So these are going to be taxpayers, in many cases, if you think of a joint one, they have losses exceeding 500,000, and they have non-business income exceeding 500,000. So these are going to be generally taxpayers with a high degree of non-business income as well. But it limits the amount of losses from these business losses that can offset that non-business income, which would just lead to a taxpayer having more tax in the current tax year, and those unused business losses then could be carried forward as a net operating loss. They become a net operating loss, so then the taxpayer doesn't lose the use of those losses. They just get pushed to a succeeding tax year.
Madam Chair, this is Greg. May I ask a quick question?
Yes, and then after Representative Smith, we will have Representative Lawrence Spence and then Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry if I jumped ahead. I apologize, colleagues.
Timing is good.
So I want to make sure I understand what the scenario looks like. So we could have a sole proprietor or single member LLC who has a significant loss of say $500,000, but they're married to a spouse who is a high income professional that also has an income of $500,000. And the scenario you're raising would be to deal with that type of household or that type of scenario. Am I correct or am I missing something?
Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry, that's a good example, yeah.
Okay, so colleagues, part of what we need to think about, and I can share with you personally, this is a situation my business and our household deals with, is we have to determine what our personal goals are in this committee or what our committee goals are in this. And that's probably a broader conversation, but we have the state with significantly declining revenues. And at the same time, we have LLCs, sole proprietors, partnerships that are scraping, trying to get by in this environment with their doors shut. And so we really find ourselves in a pickle of a situation. And I would just encourage us as we advance this concept along for us to really define what our goal is collectively as a community. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll go on mute.
Representative Lawrence Spence.
Yeah, thank you so much, Representative Smith. I was going to ask a very similar question. I wanted to also know just how many taxpayers this will impact? Do we have an understanding of what that impact rate is?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Spence. In terms of, based on some of the modeling we've done, it's hard to glean this information necessarily from the published tables, just because we're talking about, it's hard to grab from summary level information in the summary tables. But from the modeling that we've done based upon the past years, now 2020, of course, is a bit of an unknown still going forward, so that could be a little different. But the relative number, it's going to be small. I guess that's the takeaway. We're looking, to put something out there, looking at past years, maybe 1,000 taxpayers, give or take. Again, this could possibly change a bit in 2020. But the general sense is it's not very many taxpayers that fit kind of this category.
And then, Madam Chair, if I may, a follow-up.
Just a second. Yes, in a moment. Kyle, you said maybe around 1,000 taxpayers. That's out of, what, around 2.2 million or something?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Yeah, I guess when I was looking back, that's the general sense. I was looking at a little different, but that would be including, this can affect part of your non-residents as well. So, it's a very small, amount. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Lawrence Spence, continue.
I was going to ask that same question. So I'm good to go. Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson.
Representative Penny Geyer.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Thank you. So I wanted to ask a little bit more follow up on exactly who is impacted here. My understanding is that it has to be taxpayers that have single filers, $250,000 in income, and $500,000 for joint filers. And also, is it also for people that have those same levels as a pass-through entity? So I want to just understand who these people are. And if you don't have exact numbers, you said something about 1,000 people. Can you tell us what percent of filers, in terms of income level, how many of these filers, is it the top 1%, 5%, 10% of Oregon filers?
Yeah, Representative Kenny Geyer, the percentage is exceedingly small out of the 2 million or so filers total. In terms of describing it from an income standpoint can be somewhat difficult. You do, to your point, if you're a joint filer, you're not really even affected until you have more than $500,000 of losses and more than $500,000 of income before that first dollar even really gets affected. So that's part of the reason it's so limiting, is there's just not that many taxpayers that are in that situation. But because the way it works, and you're thinking, well, if you have a large business loss of, say, $500,000, even with the limit, and you offset, then you have non-business income of $750,000 or maybe just $700,000, or let me use the example, $600,000, $500,000 of that is offset. Now you look like a taxpayer who earned $100,000. Because that business loss has then offset a lot of that non-business income. And that's where it can get difficult using published tables to say, well, where do these filers land, or where do these taxpayers land? And this is the same, it's less of an issue than we have on the net operating loss folks, where a lot of times those folks that have these large losses essentially would be low income or no income, negative income possibly. So it can be hard to describe it in that one year, what did it look like for them? If you're allowed to offset a lot of that other income, you can be you may not show up necessarily as you know, the quote higher income box. Now, in many cases for these loss limitation ones, that is going to be the case. Just by definition, for the mechanics to work through, you have a lot of losses and you have to have a lot of non-business income too.
Madam Chair, this is Greg. Can I get in the queue?
You bet.
I just want to say I got knocked off. That's the first time it's ever happened to me, so I missed the entire answer, but I will find out later. Thank you, Kyle.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kenny Geyer, I wish you wouldn't have missed it. It was brilliant what he was saying. So part of what I think we have to do, though, is evaluate and dig a little deeper into the tax return of the LLC in this scenario. Because one LLC may be, investing in Hawaiian real estate for their benefit in the future, which I think we all collectively could scratch our head over. On the other hand, you may have an LLC that is really doing their very best to keep people employed, to take care of high need business activity, et cetera. And is really, you know, trying to be a genuine ethical entrepreneur, maybe perhaps even a humanitarian, and is offsetting those losses with other sources of secondary income. And so while this number of folks is very limited, let's say 1,000, which obviously would be less than 1%, and we probably realize that's not going to impact a large group of Oregonians, there may be a group in that subset that are trying to do the right thing, and this could be devastating. On the other hand, Madam Chair, without evaluating that tax return and really understanding who these people are, they could be folks who are investing in non-essential activities. So just a thought.
Thank you for your comments. Kyle, that's the end of the question queue.
Okay, Madam Chair, yeah, I think, I may have gotten to most of what I was going to talk about, just working through the questions there as well. I guess just following up on what Representative Smith just said, another point with some of these provisions, especially with pass-throughs, is there can be implications that are different based upon the different owners of the business or the shareholders for like an S corporation, depending upon the individual circumstances of those taxpayers as well. So that adds even another nuance there, where the business itself, the S corp, has the large loss, but then let's say there's three shareholders, one of those shareholders could be affected by this loss limitation, the other two may not be because they don't have that other non-business income that it in a sufficient amount to be affected by that. So it even that can make it difficult connecting the dots from the business to the individual taxpayers as well. Okay, so again, I guess to conclude here as well, we have this final slide that summon these numbers for the individual provisions, and you can see in this back to the discussion that happened earlier, I suppose you can see some in this case now it becomes a gain because we're disconnecting from the CARES Act provisions. You see some gain in the current and the upcoming biennium, and then we start to see movement back in the other direction. This is primarily right now due to the net operating losses. As we were discussing, we would expect if these losses are not allowed to be carried back, then we'll see these taxpayers beginning to use more losses than otherwise in later years because they're not carrying them back. And that's where we begin to see a revenue decline in later years as more of those losses are used down the road.
I think that, Kyle, could you please back up to the slide you were just showing? Thank you. So if you look at the sum of the total impact of this LC concept, it looks like, I'm adding those really quickly, but I think it's around $292 million revenue impact for the state over three biennia. Is that, did I get the number about right? In other words,
yeah, yeah.
Even though it looks like it's a little bit of a, it starts to look like a gain in that third biennium over three biennia, current, the next one, and the one after that, it looks like the total lost revenue is $292 million. I think.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We're ready to go.
Okay, well, I think that concludes what I had prepared. I don't know if through the discussion if Kate has anything she'd like to add as well.
There's nothing that comes to mind, but I'm happy to answer any additional questions, obviously, that the committee might have.
Representative Marsh. Representative Marsh has a question for one of you.
Rep. Marsh, are you on mute?
Sorry, now I'm good, I think. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. If you could go back to the slide right before this one that showed the biennial effects. Just to clarify, this is a simplistic question, but we only have 1 year of this biennium left for taxpayers, right? So the impacts in the 1921 will all be associated with returns that are filed in a single year. Is that correct?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, I think it's going to depend upon the provision for the net operating losses. That would be a lot of that is being driven by what we'd expect taxpayers to take advantage of that carry back.
Right.
So it's the losses, yeah, based upon, in this case, it could be tax year 18 or tax year 19, assuming that they filed that return and finished it, and then filing, say, an amended return back to up to five years back for that. And that's how it kind of places more of that in the current biennium in such a relatively short time period, I suppose.
Right. But these are, I mean, the impact is essentially out reflected on the return this year, or the income impacts are on individuals as they file in the income they are generating this year, as opposed to, as you look to future biennia, there are multiple filing periods obviously involved in those in a full 2 year cycle.
Yes, I think that's largely correct, because we're looking at 18, 19, or 20 tax years with the business interest, I think, are 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
So again, yeah, that's going to be based upon, for the 1921 biennium, I think we'd be looking at if someone's amending for their 18 tax year. But yeah, you'd be looking at a tax year 18, 19, anything from tax year 2020. It's going to depend upon the timing and when that goes through, if that can be done in time. But we looking at some of that happening in the 21-23 biennium as well, for a lot of, especially in the case of like the net operating losses. We could see that based upon the deadline to file and then how quickly anyone could carry that back based upon tax year 2020. That's why we see a lot of that in the 21-23 biennium.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Speaker, this is Greg. Mike can get in the queue.
Okay, you will be right after Representative Lawrence Spence.
Hi, Todd. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Kyle, can you go to the last slide before the closing for me, please? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that one. And then could you just, I think the larger question, I think what we're trying to balance here right now is thinking about who is really benefiting from enabling this, continuing with the connection, and who will benefit if we disconnect, right? And I guess we're trying to grapple with and help people understand is, you know, when we talk about those 1,000 taxpayers versus the out of the 2.2 million, what are we actually saying? Can we just break that down, that we're saying that if we stay connected, that we're basically helping to benefit just those 1,000 taxpayers? Or can you just clarify that, and then I'll have a follow-up.
Yeah, Representative Spence, I think that's in terms of who's benefiting from the provision. Yeah, it is going to be a relatively, in this case, the non-corporate loss limitation. Yeah, it'll be a small number of taxpayers that are receiving that benefit. Most taxpayers don't have losses or income sufficient to be affected by this provision.
And then just again, just because we've heard some different numbers today about what that direct loss to our state would be. Is it 200 or is it 295? Like, what's that actual number? if we maintain the connection, what would we then be losing as a state, that number? What is it exactly?
Representative Smith, so I believe it would, in this case, it's almost the inverse of the numbers that was on the slide. So if we're looking at the sum total slide, when the CARES Act passed, and Oregon, through our connection, that basically became Oregon tax law as well. Those were our estimates made in May, was to give some indication, okay, what did this change that was made at the federal level that Oregon's connected to, what did that just do to our expected revenue stream? Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the loss comes in, is essentially it was a tax cut for a number of taxpayers, or maybe a tax cut isn't the best way to phrase it because it can balance out over time, but it definitely changes the timing of when a taxpayer would benefit, if that's the right word for using these losses to offset other income.
I think I'm just trying to help people who are listening, because I'm getting some questions about what exactly we are talking about in terms of balancing those long-term losses versus right now, when there's a lot of immediate need in our state, and there's a lot that our state needs to do to provide services to people who don't fit into the tax bracket that would be able to benefit from these losses. And so I guess I'm trying to get to have you tease out to the layman what this would mean for them in terms of our state's ability to provide resources and services.
Representative Spence, I think in this case, this is maybe the best way to describe it is just these are the impacts on the general fund. So it's not something we generally would get into from an LRO perspective of, well, it's almost like a dynamic effect, I guess, in that way, where it's, well, the state then doesn't have these general fund dollars, how would those dollars be spent? Or it's like this taxpayer that is getting business income in some way, they don't have access to those funds. So it'd almost be trying to balance, I guess, those two actions and what that means, and what that means for the taxpayer or the taxpayer and their business, implications for that, I guess, as compared to the state and its efforts with the general fund and just general fund spending and those sorts of things.
And sorry, this is Kate from LRO. If I could just add something here in response to this specific slide, for people that are listening from more of a layman's perspective, this is showing the revenue gain or loss in each biennia if LC2 were to pass. So in the absence of this, we wouldn't have this revenue, but if this passed, this would be revenue that came into the state. And so, I hope that I just want to make it clear that this is specifically related to LC2 on this slide and the change in revenue that would come from the provisions described in that bill.
Kate, I think that was extremely helpful to let people understand that this is what we would gain if we did do the disconnect. And then it goes back to the question of what our state is able to provide for a wider range of citizens instead of enabling a tax break or offset losses for a very small minority. So I think that helps, that clarification really helps. Thank you.
Representative Smith, you're next.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a couple thoughts on this. One, again, I just want to reiterate that the scenario we talk about, I can see where this gets positioned as this is only impacting the wealthy. And I want us to be really careful on that because really, again, until you analyze your tax return, we just don't know. The second thing I would point out on this issue that we're currently discussing is this really is more of a metro issue and for the metro legislators to decide, because there's very few folks in rural Oregon, whether on the coast or in southern Oregon or eastern Oregon, that have this scenario before them, simply because if you're talking in the scenario I'm using, a W-2 income, folks with those large of W-2 secondary sources of income. That's just one thought. The second thing I want to point out, though, is I want to go back to the interest deduction conversation we had in Section 4. And it was mentioned that we had business owners that received Paycheck Protection Program dollars. it's really important for us, again, to collectively remember what our goals are, because the companies that received that money signed a commitment form saying those dollars would be used for specific purposes, including ensuring that payrolled employees were kept on the payroll and that utilities were met and that mortgage or rent payments were kept current. But part of the conversation we're forgetting to discuss is as much money that went into Paycheck Protection Program recipients, many businesses, and again, primarily those folks in the metro area, the Portland metro area, took out economic injury disaster loan loans. And the interest rate on those is 3.75%. And as soon as they signed that note, that interest began to accumulate and is accumulating. And so when you think about all those small little businesses on Broadway, on Stark, on Glisson, you know, all those streets on Foster, on Powell, they're accumulating interest expense right now. And they're going to have to determine how best they're going to manage their tax situation, knowing that if we do a disconnect, that they're now going to have to pay that extra expense. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying we need to keep that in mind, that we have a lot of businesses out there that have taken on unanticipated debt because of this crisis. And as a result of taking on that unanticipated debt, they have that interest expense accumulating on them. And these are expenses just 6 months ago they were not anticipating. So again, I really think as a committee, we need to think about what is our goal. Is our goal to generate much, much needed revenue, especially in the next biennium? Or is our goal to make sure we help sustain all these little businesses on Powell and on Glisson, on Foster, on Stark, on Broadway, to help them keep their doors open? And so we got a really tough question in front of us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Reschke, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering from LRO if they could give me a sense of what returns are going to look like in 2020 compared to those in 2019. Are we expecting a dramatic drop in returns or loss reported? Because I'm concerned that we're not taking that into consideration. We're just thinking that 2020 is similar to 2019 or 2018 or 2017.
Yes, Representative Reschke, for tax year 2020, yeah, that has been one of those. Things are changing as the underlying conditions, the health conditions and so forth change as well. And for our purposes, when we were putting together these estimates, that is a bigger unknown, certainly, is the tax year 2020. And we, through conversations that we had with the Office of Economic Analysis that puts together the revenue and economic, the quarterly forecast, our goal was to try to link our modeling to their OEA's underlying assumptions for the economic and revenue outlook. We are increasing expectation of losses in tax year 2020 to try to account for at least where we think or what our best estimate is of what 2020 could look like. Again, I don't want to say that, I mean, there's certainly not a crystal ball there. There's a lot unknown. So for our purposes, in a lot of cases, we were looking to, well, what have we seen maybe in past recessions to give us some sense of even a gauge of what we could expect, even though we're probably expecting this to be certainly more condensed. It's not your typical recession that maybe takes a couple years to slide into. We went into it relatively overnight. In terms of kind of the upshot there is we are trying to link to the underlying assumptions that OEA is using as well to account for that in tax year 2020 and how those estimates work.
Thank you. Madam Chair, could I make a quick comment and then I think I'll be done with my questioning for right now?
Sure.
Thank you. And this is goes back to my earlier questions of the purpose of the CARES Act. And what I've heard back is that the purpose is primarily for offering businesses liquidity, and this goes to Representative Smith's point, is our purpose to in LC2 to help businesses maintain liquidity. To me, it seems like what we're doing is the federal government has given $225 million of opportunity to businesses in Oregon, and instead the state is coming in and swooping or subverting that and saying, no, that's our money, we need it more than you do. So that's concerning to me, as well as the notion that LC2 doesn't address the fact that there's a possibility that Oregonians are going to pay state taxes on the $1,200, $2,400, and $500 stimulus checks they got a couple months ago. So the fact that we may be taxing income that Oregonians aren't expecting at the state level that is exempt from the federal, and the fact that we're, in a sense, subverting what we're doing for what the CARES Act was to do to provide businesses liquidity so they can survive this recession is deeply troubling to me. Thank you.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This has been a great discussion, and I really want to thank you for holding this because we automatically are connected unless we make an affirmative decision to disconnect. So I just want to build on a couple of the things that other people have said here. One is reiterating that whatever the purpose of including this at the CARES Act, businesses are and individuals are able to collect the tax benefit in the CARES Act on their federal tax returns, which of course is a much bigger number than the state. In terms of the hit on the state and the benefit versus cost, I go back to what Kyle said in the beginning about every state is affected very differently by this if they are connected, because some states are more reliant on income tax than others, and that is certainly us. And that is why I am glad we're taking a really strong look at this instead of just automatically going along with the connect. In terms of, you know, what I've heard, and again, I got knocked off for a little bit, so I'm sorry if I got any of this wrong, but it sounded like a very small percentage of tax filers. And in the example that Representative Smith gave earlier with the spouse who lost $500,000 in his business, but his wife who had a professional job that made at least $500,000, in order to even take a benefit from this, you have to, as a joint filer, make at least $500,000 in income. So those are the people we're talking about. I also appreciate Representative Smith's later comment about this being more in an urban area, and I represent an urban area. In fact, I represent 4 out of 5 of the streets that you mentioned, Representative Smith, are all in my district. And so I you know, of course, I'm very concerned about small businesses being able to survive. And I don't feel that these provisions are ones that are really looking out for the small businesses. I also just want to say, in terms of the, you know, how does this impact Oregon and the kinds of tax policy that we've passed, I want to remind people that we did give a preferential rate of up to 2% lower than other income tax rates on pass-throughs. I'm also curious about, you know, most of these, a lot of these businesses are able to take PPP loans. I heard you say, Kyle, that we don't know exactly how many of them have had those loans. But when I put all of those things together, and I think about, at least on that first provision or this business interest limitation, business loss limitations, 90 million going to under 1,000 filers who have had to make on a joint case at least 500,000. I am led to the same conclusions that Representative Lawrence Spence has raised, which is, you know, is this going to the right people? Is this actually bringing revenue, benefiting urban area and making the rural economic recovery even harder if that's actually the urban people are the ones that are going to get more of the benefit? So that is why this is a lot to digest, but I really appreciate, Madam Chair, you putting this on the table, and I really appreciate the discussion here with my colleagues. Thank you.
We've worked our way through the current question and comment queue. I'm going to ask for Legislative Revenue Office to clarify a couple of things that have come up in conversation. One is for people who are listening this morning who may not follow Revenue Committee throughout the year, and especially when we're having those terrific briefings, could you please explain quickly what pass-through income is? It's been referred to a couple of times, and Representative Kenny Geyer just commented on a preferential tax rate for pass-through income, meaning income earned as a business, but then passed through and reported on a personal income tax return. Could you please explain that just a bit for us, what it is and about what the tax rate is? Could you also please clarify for us, there was a comment about taxing federal stimulus payments, and there it's kind of nuanced, but the income is not taxed directly. There is another effect happening, but could you please explain that a bit more for us?
Sure, Madam Chair. The taxing of the stimulus payments, the way the stimulus payment is implemented is it's a reduction of the federal tax liability. So that ties into the Oregon subtraction for federal tax. So there's an Oregon federal tax subtraction. And to the extent that federal taxes are reduced, then that subtraction is reduced. And that results in a net revenue gain to the state. And that's highlighted in the CARES report that we released a couple months ago. So that's that piece. The other question on the PTE, that is the pass-through preferential rates that were passed back in the 2013 session and have been in effect since 2015. And those marginal tax rates apply to active small business income that gets taxed on the personal income tax return. And is the rate is as low as 7%. There's a graduated rate up to the 9.9, but it's as low as 7%. And I believe that is the policy that Rep. Kenny Geyer is referring to.
It was, and Madam Chair, can I make one comment on that?
Sure.
Thank you. This was a big kind of a bone to pick for me back in the 2013 session when we passed that in the grand bargain. I want to clarify that that preferential rate or lower marginal tax rate was not really just for small businesses. It was not limited to small businesses. It was based on how businesses were set up. And so it was not for C-Corps, but was for S-Corps and LLCs and a variety of tax structures. And in fact, they could be making millions and millions of dollars, and they still got that preferential rate up to on their first $5 million. So every time I hear small business, I need to clarify for the record that it was not limited to small businesses. So thank you so much, Chris Allenack, for allowing me to put that on the record as well.
So since we're talking about PTE, pass-through entity, could you give us an example? I have a list in my head, but I'd rather LRO give us a list of examples of what kind of businesses are structured as a pass-through entity.
Generally, we're referring to it's not C corporations, it's S corporations and partnerships. And then even in 2018, that PTE policy was extended to sole proprietors. So it's any business that's structured one of those ways, as well as LLCs. It can be a single member LLC, or it can be an LLC that files as a partnership. So it's basically non-C corporation businesses. And Rep. Kenny Geyer is correct that it's not the income limitation, the amount of income that's limited to those preferential rates. It's a graduated structure up to the $5 million. At its peak, then the largest rate differential is down to the 7% taxable tax rate. Is that what you meant by example, or?
Sure. I wonder if
Kyle might have, I don't want to put Kyle on the spot, but he might have something more illustrative of a type of business, and maybe that's what
right.
You had in mind.
Yeah, let's talk about what business types or industry sectors where you might find these pass-through entities where the tax rate is
might be different.
Yeah, Madam Chair, as Chris was describing there, it's non-C-Corps. And C-Corps are going to be your publicly traded corporations. So in terms of what's a pass-through, it's kind of everything else. And that it can really be a wide variety of the types of businesses where you can think of, there's lots of different, that could be a partnership, a dental office, or down to the sole proprietorships, which is just, it's the owner is the business in that case. They're pretty much, that's all they are. It's one and the same in that case. So it can stretch from some very small businesses to ones that are certainly larger, have more income, more gross receipts, more sales, those type of things, especially when we see on some of the S-Corps and the partnerships. They can be large. They can, and I guess that'd be the takeaways. It can certainly range from large to small, even though C-Corps are kind of those publicly traded corporations that maybe come to people's minds. We do have information. I don't have any in front of me right now that talks about some of the sectors and that breakdown of how these are set up. That again, it's usually at the NAICS sector level, which is going to be a high level overview of the type of sector, say like the law sector or something like that, that we can provide to the committee that gives some indication of the types of businesses that you're talking about here. One thing I would add, and it's related, but it's something I meant to mention earlier as well, is on the business interest limitation modification, there is a floor in place that was put in place at the federal level related to that limitation of it's only affecting entities with gross receipts of $25 million or above. I think that's actually indexed to inflation, so it might have gone up to $26 million. So, again, circling back to the pass-throughs, the vast majority of pass-throughs are not going to have gross receipts above that $25 million. So, again, that limits in some cases the applicability of this interest limitation, or even whether Oregon disconnects or doesn't disconnect, most numerically speaking, are not going to be affected by the provision because they don't have sufficient gross receipts to get up to be affected by it to begin with. And I apologize for not mentioning that earlier.
Thank you. Thank you for adding that. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Kyle hit on the point that I was going to make real quick, is that I want to make sure that we don't pigeonhole pass-throughs, S-Corps, and LLCs, or sole proprietors, as just the monopoly character with the monocle and the cane and the top hat, and that they're wealthier beyond all belief. They can be single people. I remember running a S-Corp for about 18 years, and it was pretty much myself and my wife, and we hired a lot of vendors, but we were certainly not rich by any means. These businesses employ a lot of people. So if we're concerned about people in urban areas, we need S-Corps and LLCs that are throughout all the urban areas to thrive and make it through this recession so that they can continue to employ the people. Because the last thing I think any of us want are for businesses to close because they couldn't meet their financial obligations, they had liquidity problems, and therefore send all their employees to the unemployment line.
Thank you. I don't have anyone else in the queue for questions or comments at this time. Mr. Alanak, there's a lot of information that's been brought out in the formal presentations and then through the questions from the members of the committee. Do you have any comments or points that you'd like to add in based on the kinds of questions that are coming in?
Sure, Madam Chair. As people were talking, there were I was taking notes on a lot of things, and there's some questions that we'll be getting back to the committee on. A couple things I wanted to make sure it was clear is that the connection between the business loss limitations and the NOLs policies, those are intricately linked, where to the extent that any business loss limitations can't be claimed in a given year, they kind of turn into NOLs. So that's one piece, as opposed to them being very distinct policies. So changing one affects the other. So those are kind of symbiotic. The other piece, and if, I don't know, Kate, if you can pull up that slide that had the revenue impacts, there's been a lot of discussion about the timing and some of the unknowns, and Rep. Rushkey was talking about tax year 2020, and Kyle is right about the uncertainty. I just want to make sure these impacts that we're talking about are already, that it's understood that they're already embedded in the June forecast, which is why the slide here shows a positive impact if LC2 were to be passed compared to the June forecast. There was some confusion at the time around that. And also even the timing of the 2020, and I'm trying to think through the actual timing of this, but right now we have estimated losses for tax year 2020, and 2020 is not expected to be the same as 18 and 19, but it's currently unfolding before us with all of the responses and the virus kind of leading the way. Now, where that shows up, for example, in the net operating losses is a relatively similar impact between the biennia 1921 and 2123, and that has to do with the timing of the tax year 2020 filings. And so when that happens at the end of tax year 2020 is when taxpayers will know what their losses are for the year and then be able to apply those to prior tax years. So that feeds into some of the uncertainty around the number of taxpayers affected. And so I think Kyle did a good job of answering that question. But just some of the timing, there were a handful of timing questions. I just wanted to add a couple of those thoughts.
Committee, any other questions or comments so that legislative revenue has an opportunity to do research for us or prepare other information?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have one more if they're going back and doing research. I understand that some of the revenues that we would lose if this were to not, if we were not to disconnect, if we were to stay automatically connected, are revenues that will be in amended returns from 2018 or prior, where people can, where individuals can go back and claim losses from as far back as 2013. So these are ostensibly taxes that they've already paid, and yet and the state of Oregon has already held from those tax years, and then we will have to go back. If I'm understanding that correctly, I'm wondering if, as you do more research, you can help us understand how much revenue we would be under this CARES Act provision losing from prior years where we've already collected that revenue, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. I don't know if there's a way that you can guess that, but that would be interesting to know as well.
Well, we don't, in terms of the dollar amount, we don't have that at this point, but we have been in touch with the Department of Revenue about amended returns filed since the implementation, since the passage of the CARES Act, more or less since April 1st. And the last time we touched base with DOR, which I think was last week or so, there were a total of maybe 60 amended returns for tax years 2018 and going back to 2013. And maybe 30 of those had indicated that they were related to NOLs. So those are kind of taxpayer tax years. So the number of 2018 returns amended are relatively small. We wouldn't know the dollar amount without to Rep. Smith's point, without analyzing the returns. And these are the process for DOR's process for actually processing the amended returns is a bit slower. And Kyle might have some more detail on that, but I don't think they've been processed yet. It's different from the direct returns. The other question is the 2019 returns. So what we've seen so far are the amended returns that I mentioned before for 2018 and earlier. Much of the impact is really born with 2020, because 2020, as the revenue forecast showed, the June forecast, the revenue forecast in 2020 is expected to be less, much less than prior years. 18 and 19 were by all accounts pretty good. So much of this revenue impact feeds to 2020, and then to the extent once those losses are known, the filing of amended returns prior to that. But that number I gave before is what we have to date on those amended returns.
But even in the non-amended, even in the returns to come for 2020, they will still be able to go back several years and reclaim revenue that the state had already collected. Is that correct? From prior years?
Yeah, to the extent the CARES Act allows them to file amended returns for up to 5 years or carry back the NOLs for up to 5 years.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kenny Geyer, you used a word revenue, but I wonder if you also mean refund.
Correct. Thank you, Madam Chair. It would be a refund of taxes that they had previously paid and that the state of Oregon had collected as a revenue, and then we would be turning around and giving it back to them in a refund for prior years. I hope I said that correctly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Any other final comments or questions? I want to make sure I leave time in case someone was on the phone and wanting to come in. Representative Smith, any chance that you have any final comment or question? Okay. Thank you, Representative Reschke. Could we please be on standby for just about 60 seconds? I have a technical question to ask of Legislative Revenue Office. Thank you all for your patience. Oh, and Representative Owens is with us as well. Good to see you. Thank you for joining us. We're about completed with our business. The presentations have ended. We have had questions and comments from all the other members. Representative Owens, I'm not sure at exactly what point you joined us. Was there anything in the presentation that you'd like to ask for clarification or make a comment on before we adjourn?
Chair Nathanson, not at this time. I'll review it. I appreciate that. If I could email you or staff with any questions, that'd be great.
Certainly. Yes, please do. And I am asking Legislative Revenue Office to hold the record open until tomorrow at noon for any other testimony that might be submitted. We're happy to take your comments until noon tomorrow. Any other business before us today? I'm not hearing any from Legislative Revenue Office. As long as I can get a thumbs up, okay. Thank you all for joining us today. We're adjourned.